The following program is a tribute to Earl G. Graves, Sr., founder of Black Enterprise magazine. In Black America, spoke with Graves in November 2001. Graves died on April 6, 2020. He was 85.
From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
People kept saying to me, how'd you do what you did? And I'd say, well, you know, one day I'll write it. And then somebody said to me, you know, if you wrote it, you could make some money. you know, this would, you'd get some publicity and it would work out. Well, it was tough because, you know, I'm not disciplined enough to want to sit down and start thinking back to what I did and looking at it, and we're talking about doing this over it's really working at the heart to get a book banged out, even with somebody who's working with you. And I did have someone working with me. That person prompted me and made my talking out loud, and that person sitting there typing away on a computer, a laptop, as we talked and taking notes at the same time, then coming back and cutting it and putting it back together. And people who are going to publish a book for you expect to make money. And I must say to you that I got my first royalty check at the beginning of this year. So it means I got paid in advance for the book. They did it what I think was a very reasonable sense of marketing of the book in terms of when it was out. And I guess this is about 3 years ago I did this book, I think. We did a book tour all over the country, which turned out to be very successful. We made the New York Times bestseller business list. We made the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list.
Earl G. Graves, Sr., founder and publisher, Black Enterprise Magazine. Black Enterprise Magazine is the premier business news publication for African-American entrepreneurs, corporate executives, professionals, and decision makers. Graves has been a tremendous force in leading the Black business community to new heights and a nationally recognized authority on Black business development. In 1972, he was named one of the 10 most outstanding minority businessmen in the country by President Nixon. In 1974, he was named one of Time Magazine's 200 Future Leaders of the Country. In 1970, with a $175,000 loan, he started his publication. I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Black Enterprise Magazine with founder and publisher Earl G. Graves, Sr., In Black America.
At the end of the day, I urge your listeners to aspire to all the things I've talked about and go even further than I've gone. But in addition to that, look back and not forget to help those who've been less fortunate along the way, because that's, if you were fortunate enough, you got to reach back and do it. And in addition, don't forget to take care of yourself, male or female. Getting up 3 or 4 days a week if you only walk 3 miles. I was just off in the Caribbean getting an honorary degree last week, and I walked 6 miles a day before breakfast. And I urge people to do that, because taking care of yourself is very, very important. The reason that you and I are talking tonight is, ladies, we had to change it a couple of times because I was having an annual physical at Howard University with their outstanding doctors there, and it's a place where I'm also a trustee. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in also doing business with who I do business with. And so when it comes to even my medical care, I believe that I should find qualified African-American doctors and qualified African-American lawyers, and whether they're he or she, if they can do the job, I want to do business with them.
Earl Graves has served as publisher of Black Enterprise for 30 years. He is continually sought after as a keynote speaker by small and large corporations alike, and is the author of the book entitled How to Succeed in Business Without Being White. Graves has shown himself to be more than just a successful businessman. He is a role model for all African Americans. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, he graduated from Morgan State University in 1957 with a BA in economics. The business school there bears his name. Until recently, he served as chairman and CEO of Pepsi-Cola of Washington, D.C., the largest minority-controlled Pepsi-Cola franchise in the country. During the span of his business and professional career, he has received numerous awards and honors for his outstanding business leadership and community service. Recently, In Black America spoke with Earl G. Graves, Sr.
I grew up in a household where my mother and father were very much there. My father and mother, in particular, my father ran the house with a democracy with a very small D. For democracy in terms of what it was. He demanded that my two sisters and my brother and I all do well in school. They inculcated and hammered home that we had to be somebody, that we had to own something, that we had to do well. But when I was growing up in what was then Bedford-Stuyvesant, there was a sense of community, meaning that if we did something wrong, a Mrs. Williams, who was only up the street about three or four doors, would first come down and give me a whack if mm-hmm. I wasn't doing something right, and then go back up and sit in the window. When she saw my father coming down the street from work, very tired from the job that he had, probably she would come down or call to the, from the window and say I had acted up, so that meant I was going to get a double dealing, one from Mrs. Williams who had already taken care of it, and then my father to make sure that I got the message. I don't think that made me a bad person. I don't mean to make this response as long as it is, but I grew up, and I also had my first deal in my entrepreneurial yearnings, if you will.
Okay.
I was selling Christmas cards at age 7, and my route, if you will, or my sales area was the square block I lived on. I had to keep making right turns because I was not allowed to cross the street.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to the corner, I made a right turn, went down the other side of the block, and I covered that whole square. And within that square, I mean, there were several thousand people in terms of the area that I grew up in.
How did you happen to select Morgan State?
I worked in a library as one of the many jobs that I had growing up through all the way through high school. I was working in a library and, in fact, getting paid 57 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a gentleman working there by the name of Sam Young, who I have many, many times have hoped I would have found him. I don't even know if he's still alive, and if he were even hearing this broadcast and mm-hmm. said that I'm the same Sam Young used to work in the library, I'd be delighted to know that, one, he's still alive, and just to compare notes, because he took me down to Morgan on a visit. I listened to him talk about Morgan over the course of a couple of years. He was a graduate of Morgan State and then went on to NYU, and I think it was, and got his master's degree in library science. And he talked about this Morgan State all the time. Well, I went down there on just one trip and fell in love. At first, I'd never been on a real college campus before. Went down and I saw it was Baccalaureal Day, which means just the religious ceremonies having to do with the graduation, which was going to be the next day. And here were all of these young men who were lieutenants already.
Right.
And they were going to be sworn in officially as lieutenants the next day. And they were walking around, and here was a campus with a track and a football field. And I was just dazzled, and I came home and made up my mind that I wanted to go away to school. Well, the rest of it is history. 45 years later, graduate of Morgan State. There's a business school at Morgan State University, which is our largest school on the campus in terms of number of students in it, and the name of the school is the Earl G. Gray School of Business and Management. And so let's just say that Morgan gave me something in terms of an education, and over the last 40 years or 45 years, I've given back to Morgan. And I think in a very meaningful way in terms of what I got from that school and what I think I have an obligation to give back. But, of course, as you and I both know, John, and we discussed this before, mm-hmm. this is something that we both believe in, and that is the giving back, whether it's the NAACP or whether right. or not it's Operation Push with Jesse Jackson or the Urban League or the Southern Christian Leadership Conference or the program that Mrs. King runs in memory of Dr. King. All the colleges that we attend. I've now spoken probably to 60 different college graduations and have probably almost as many honorary degrees. And I look forward to doing it all the time because I think that the young people need to know what the challenges are. They need to know what it is to accumulate wealth and build wealth, because I believe that today that if we're going to have the position we should and need to have in this country, then we have to do it by wealth accumulation. We're not going to do it by just, in itself, owning a house. We have to have something that we're going to pass on to future generations.
Why and when did you become an administrative assistant to the late U.S. Attorney General and Senator Robert F. Kennedy?
You've done your research very well, John, but that doesn't surprise me. That's why you're as successful as you are. I worked for Robert Kennedy full-time from 1965 to 68. I joined his staff. I first had worked during his president when his brother was president as a federal agent,
mm-hmm.
and with the tragedy of his death and Robert Kennedy stepping down from being Attorney General, and all of this came under him as Attorney General. I went into real estate where I had done some sales before and had been quite successful at it. When Senator Kennedy ran for the Senate in 1964, I had the opportunity to do some volunteer work for him. And that's, by the way, is the reason that this campaign that's coming up is so important to me. I assume that by the time this is, the election will be over.
Mm-hmm.
Elections have a very special meaning for me, because I believe had the tragedy of Robert Kennedy's death in 1968 not happened, he would have been president of the United States. Our country would be a much better place and a much different place, and we would not still be arguing about equality, at least not to the extent that we are today.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I worked for Kennedy in 68, and with the tragedy of his death and assassination, I went into business for myself in 1968, and in 1969, the idea and concept of a Black Enterprise magazine came along. In August of 1970, its first issue came out, and in this August, we just celebrated 30 years of Black Enterprise. The circulation, as of January 1st, will have a guarantee of over 400,000. There are 4 million readers of Black Enterprise magazine, and we have 3 sons that work in various businesses. We have 2 of who work directly within doing things with the magazine, and you know, you get a return on your investment for paying all this tuition, John, which
right.
we talked about before, if you stay with it long enough.
Having an idea is one thing, but putting that idea into practice and actually seeing it come to fruition. Give us a backstage look at once the idea that formulated in your brain of making that idea a reality.
I had worked in economic development for Robert Kennedy in the 3 years I worked for him. Said I was doing this full-time, so I did things having to do with real estate development. I did things having to do with healthcare delivery. And I did some things having to do with other areas of urban planning that happened to do with the cities of New York State. So he was a senator from the junior senator from New York, and Senator Javits, the Republican, was the senior senator, a very liberal and also a good man. In any event, with the tragedy of his death, it really was a matter of what was I going to do. Mm-hmm. I think if I didn't cover it, if I'm repeating myself, stop me. And so looking at what the opportunities might be, I first thought of an idea of a newsletter. And then somebody suggested to me if I was going to do a newsletter, why not do a magazine? Well, since I didn't know very much about a newsletter and probably even less about a magazine, seemed to me that it made some sense. I went and asked for some advice from people who I thought they knew something about a magazine. They did offer some help, particularly people in the advertising industry, and drove home the importance of what advertising was going to mean, because certainly I know full well, one, having been in the radio business and done so fairly successfully, and two, just in knowing for the success and what it took for you to get where you are with your programming and your stations, because we are both in the communication business, in my case in print and your case in broadcast, but both of us have to go out and get those almighty advertising dollars, and therefore I had to have a vehicle, meaning that magazine, that was going to warrant people wanting to advertise. Well, we're just a couple of dollars shy of doing $40 million a year now with the magazine alone. And so obviously when you reach that level, we are number 65 in growth out of the thousands of magazines you have in this country this year in terms of the increase in sales that we have enjoyed. Now, I have to give a lot of credit to two of our sons who are directly involved with the magazine. And I think we have to give credit to the fact that we have an outstanding editorial staff. We have an outstanding group of young people who work for it, not just my two sons, although I'm very proud of them. And more and more people recognize the importance of what we're saying. We're a how-to book. We're saying to people that we mean to show the way. And we're talking about the importance of wealth saving and wealth accumulation. And we're talking about the importance of planning for the future. And I think what gave me more of a push in the right direction with setting goals for myself. I've done that since I can think, all the way back when I was 8 or 9 years old. Wanted to have a bicycle. I went out and saved money by selling Christmas cards to do that, and I couldn't have been more than 8 years old. I wanted to be a lifeguard. I made up my mind that I was going to swim because I knew at the beaches that's where all the young girls were, and they were paying $10.05 a day, and that was a lot of money when I was in college. And so I went down, kept on practicing and swimming, and became that lifeguard. Knew I wanted to be an officer in the Army, went through the ROTC, did that, and was fairly successful at that, although I didn't stay in the service. When I got out, I was a captain in the Special Forces, which is, you remember, it's the Green Berets.
Green Beret, right.
And if you ask me, I met a wonderful woman who I met, and we have now been married 40 years, and when I met her, first of all, I thought she had the best-looking legs I'd ever seen in my life. She wasn't just pretty, she was. But, you know, you got to look all over. Now, of course, my mother was mortified because she just said if she had a warm personality. But I used to say, Mom, I can't go on personality. I got to ride the subway with this lady. So she's got to look a certain way. So I found a lady who I very much love to this day. And she becomes more, we become more and more partners and friends as our marriage continues. We have 3 sons, as I said, 3 daughter-in-laws and 7 grandchildren. And so I think I'm very blessed. And I don't think I do what I do by myself. By the way, I have a spiritual feeling and a belief in a God that says that if you want, you've got to set those same goals. And then on occasion, get down on your knees and remember that you've got to give something back and that it all doesn't come to you just because you're smart.
You're listening to In Black America with Johnny O. Hanson, Jr. We'll be back with more of our conversation in just a moment. Now, on with our conversation. Mr. Grace, when we spoke about 15 years ago, you had mentioned that it was difficult in convincing advertisers to advertise in your magazine for the simple fact that they didn't believe African-Americans was interested in business or interested in investing. I went through my stockpile of Black Enterprise magazine, found the January 83 edition, 64 pages.
Right.
Current edition that I located, September 2000, which is an anniversary edition, 216 pages. What has changed since then?
Well, first of all, and most importantly, foremost, I have less hair on top of my head.
Okay, right. You and I.
That's right, from trying to make this thing fly. But we had a strategy, we had a plan, we had a goal. We knew that we wanted to say how to. I say to my people all the time, we're not saying how to, we're not doing the job. Because our magazine really is talking to people, I would say to you, median age in the 39 or thereabouts. But I mean, it is for the person getting out of college, it is for the person in college. Mm-hmm. There's something there for everyone. It's the person who's looking at another career. They're retiring from the Army at age 39, they're retiring from being a policewoman, and they want to do something else, they're retiring. But in terms of what we wanted the magazine to do, and now, and 30 years later, John, quite frankly, the advertisers believe it. We have some of the most upscale advertising you'll find in the country.
Correct.
Our second area of advertising are financial service companies. Well, you're talking about Merrill Lynch, you're talking about Dean Witter, you're talking about the Bank of America, you're talking about Chase Manhattan Bank, you're talking about American Express, which is a huge advertiser with us. You're talking about Charles Schwab, where we know both Mr. Schwab and Dave Partrack, who's the co-CEOs of that company. So there are very few entities you would talk about in that area we don't do business. We do a ton of business with the auto industry and very upscale cars, all the big three, Toyota, Mercedes-Benz, now called Daimler-Benz. We do business with across the board with BMW, Volvo, Jaguar. And to mention those, if you look at the upscale liquor brands, we certainly do an area of business with those.
Mm-hmm.
When the colleges who are looking and people who are recruiting, we are the number one magazine in the country for recruitment advertising, because the people that read our magazine are the people that businesses are looking for. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you need to understand, we are 20% of the people who read our magazine are people actually are business people putting the key in the door themselves, owning that business.
Mm-hmm.
80 to 85% of the people are people who work in corporate America, people who work at radio stations and at a radio station is one owner, two owners, unless it's a partnership or unless it's a corporation of some kind or a public corporation. And then the other people work there. They are very, very good at what they do. I mean, for example, one of the best broadcasters in the country is probably you and I would agree is Tom Joyner. He works for ABC and does a hell of a job, and he's a good friend. But the fact is he may own stock in ABC, but he doesn't own that company, right? He's an owner by virtue of owning some of the stock. And yet he's an outstanding executive, one of the premier personalities in this country. Whether you're talking about broadcast, you're just talking about another area where a person develops himself or herself into being a first-class personality. And so I am talking to the people who work at IBM. I'm talking to the people who work at Lucent, or what used to be Lucent. I'm talking to the people that work at AT&T. I'm talking to people that work at airlines. I'm talking to people that work at major multinational corporations, and I'm, of course, talking to those people who work at black businesses, whether or not that's a radio station that's black program and black owned, or I'm talking about a company such as my own, or I'm talking about the people at Essence, or I'm talking with the people at auto dealerships where someone who's African-American owns the dealership. And so we have a broad range. The reason that we enjoy the popularity I think we do today is because we have what we have promised our readers and our subscribers to do, we have done as an entity.
Why is it important for Black Enterprise to publish the BE 100s?
We had looked at measuring businesses in this country made up our minds in 1973, meaning our editors and our editorial staff, that it was time to have a compilation of what the leading black-owned businesses were in the country. And the first time we did it, was in, I think the total revenues were $473 million. And the number one company in 1970 was Motown Records or Motown Industries, which mm-hmm. was Barry Gordy's company. Today, the number one company by itself is in excess of $473 million. So you can show you the progress we have made now. And now it is almost 1973, so we're talking 20-something years
mm-hmm.
That we've been doing this list. We have now divided the list, and so one half of the list if you will, of one half of the BE100s, which is actually 200 companies, are the auto dealership separate list, and then what we call the industrial service companies. My own company, we have had historically two companies on that list. I just sold our Pepsi Cola business in Washington, D.C., and stay invested with Pepsi Cola. It's one of the outstanding corporations in this country, if not in the world, from a branding point of view and as a company to do business with. Mm-hmm. But Black Enterprise and the other entities we have are still a part of it. We own a private equity company where today, which is another thing we do, our corporation lends money not to startups and not to real estate deals, but to companies that are mid-sized African-American or other minority-owned businesses who are looking for money to expand, to go to that next tranche of growing as an entity. So we're talking about people that are doing already $25, $30 million a year in business and are looking for an investor who's going to put money in but also wants to own a part of the company, and that's what we do. And then down the road, he or she will sell the company, and we will both make money if everything we have planned works out the way we mean it to. So we've gone from what was a very modest listing of the companies in this country back in 1973 to now we have a list of the banks and financial institutions. We have a list of the investment banking firms. We have a list of the, what have I left out? Let me see. I mentioned the banks. I mentioned the
companies.
Excuse me?
Insurance companies.
Insurance companies, thank you. And the advertising companies, which are now a part of, the BE100s. And so and there's much research. Our people finish 1 year and start doing the research for the next year. It's not something you wait until January to start doing. I mean, by January, we've gotten a good part of the numbers for what will be next year's list. And so it's a very exciting part of what we do. And people, you asked me once, but when am I ever going to retire? And the answer is, I think they'll take me out feet first and they say, well, that guy Gray's put in a good life and now we're taking him right to the cemetery or right to the funeral home. But I enjoy what I do too much. I want to spend more and more time with my wife. We're going to do a trip around the world next year. Mm-hmm. It's something that we want to do together. And remember, John, if you and I don't spend it, our kids will, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, and my sons and I enjoy working together, I must say. We have a very unique situation. We have a very close family. We vacation together in the summertime. We vacation together in the wintertime. And so, as I said, I feel very blessed in terms of what my family. If you ask me what I measure as my success, I say my family first, and then I think whatever I have achieved in business after.
Good. When did you come to the realization that you needed to write a book? And you did. How to succeed in business without being white?
I think was two reasons that happened. One is people kept saying to me, how'd you do what you did? And I'd say, well, you know, one day I'll write it. And then somebody said to me, you know, if you wrote it, you could make some money. Right? I mean, you'd get some publicity and it would work out. Well, it was tough because, you know, I'm not disciplined enough to want to sit down and start thinking back to what I did and looking at it, and we're talking about doing this it's really working at it hard to get a book banged out, even with somebody who's working with you, and I did have someone working with me. That person prompted me and made my talking out loud, and that person sitting there typing away on a computer, mm-hmm. a laptop as we talked, and taking notes at the same time, then coming back and cutting it and putting it back together. And people who are going to publish a book for you expect to make money. And I must say to you that I got my first royalty check at the beginning of this year. So it means I got paid in advance for the book. They did it what I think was a very reasonable sense of marketing of the book in terms of when it was out. And I guess isn't it about 3 years ago I did this?
Correct.
Thing. We did a book tour all over the country, which turned out to be very successful. We made the New York Times bestseller business list. We made the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list.
Did you ever get tired of writing your name?
No, I think that's part of what I enjoy. I mean, I love going on the college campus and talking to students all the time. I love going to these graduations. I did four of them this year. I did Grambling this year. I did Florida A&M this year. I did North Carolina A&T, and I did Morris Brown. And if somebody else had asked about it, when did that one also? And it cost me money. Money is time for me, and so doing them is in one way giving back, and another way it's a sacrifice. But, I mean, I just get energized visiting these campuses, seeing these young people who have the aspirations that we do. And if there was any one thing I regret as I look at it, is that racism is still abounds in this country. It doesn't mean we can't get to where we need to, but it's just one more thing we have to overcome, and not a modest thing. And I would hope, and that's why I think this election is so important, that we put in place a person, or will have put in place a person by the time this broadcast comes to is a person who will do the right thing, and I must say that I think that person would be, hopefully will turn out to be Al Gore.
Why was it important for BE to have these economic summits? You have the tennis and golf.
Well, first of all, I mean, our audience has to meet each other. We have to network.
Okay.
I mean, you have to know people. We have to find each other. And so we started our conferences. First, we started a golf and tennis event, which has become the premier event for upscale African-Americans meeting each other every Labor Day over a four-day holiday. And it's turned out to be very successful for, from the point of view, it is the largest program or the largest entity happening in terms of the coming together of the kind of people who read our magazine. And it gives them, I mean, you're talking about 500 golfers. Anybody who's a golfer black in the United States that doesn't show up at our event, as people will tell you, then they're not a real golfer. At least they're not a golfer who really wants to compete and meet and greet other African-Americans. And then people who play tennis can do their tennis thing. And then the Doral, where we've had this for the last 7 years, is the premier, has a premier first-class spa where people have been known to go in there at 7 in the morning and not come out till 7 at night. And so it is a fun time. People bring their kids, and so there's now, and after 7 years, kids who have met each other and started to grow up, and some have even gone off to college together. We've had a couple of marriages that have come out of our event. I haven't heard about any divorces, so I'm hoping those don't happen.
Well, that's
and
good.
Now we have, and then the other thing we have, and we've been doing now for 5 years, is our Entrepreneurs Conference, and that's really focused on strictly on business. We do have some golf in the afternoons, but for the most part, it is a coming together. If you have an interest in how you're going to grow your business, how you're going to start a business, how you're going to consider the idea of a different career, it is a place you'd want to come if you want to, if you need money for your business. We have financial institutions who are there to invest in businesses and make loans to businesses from both a private sector point of view and public companies as well as governmental agencies. So it's something which is extremely successful. We anticipate having a technology conference sometime early next year. We're also moving our Entrepreneurs Conference to Nashville, Tennessee next year. So the first week in May, the first 10 days in May, I forget exactly the location, but it's a four-day event. I don't remember, but I think it's somewhere around the 7th, 8th, 9th. My son would probably shoot me for not knowing the date.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that we look forward to. And then we have a ski challenge
in
Vail, Colorado. Now, all of these things are not just done for fun on the part of our company at all. One, they're done because we think it's important for our readership and the people who are our subscribers. But two, that we do it because there are money-making events and things where people do pay and pay because it's something they want to enjoy, it's something they want to learn, and it's a participation which we think we've been very fortunate to have taken a hold and run with this thing.
This has been a tribute to Earl G. Graves, Sr., founder of Black Enterprise magazine. Graves died on April 6, 2020. He was 85. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.